the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up, and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. I'm here with my co-host, Brooke Medina. This is Ray Nothstein. I'm back. We've got some good topics for you today. We're going to look at our first jobs, maybe some back-to-school stuff. Recession talk is big, and the stock market's down. Biggest loss yesterday this year, and it's continuing into today. We're going to address the Philadelphia shooter that was in the news big time yesterday. And I think it's important. There's some important tie-ins there for North Carolina. And the latest on NC Civitas polls and all the national attention that our polls are getting right now because of the presidential race and how North Carolina is such a swing state. So, Brooke, what's going on? Your kids have started school. You had a daughter that started a job. So we're going to jump in and talk about maybe first jobs and just any related school experiences that our listeners will, I think, will really appreciate.
Yeah. So if you remember your first day of school at the beginning of each year, if you were like me, you had a really, really hard time falling asleep the night before because you were just so excited that there might be new kids in the class. You got to wear your new outfit that your parents wouldn't let you wear that entire summer, even though you bought it at the beginning of the summer. New shoes. Oh, so much fun. So I have fond memories of the first day of school, except the fact that my stomach was always in knots because I was really excited. What about you?
Yeah, I think I would be nervous sometimes. A lot of my remembrances of first day of schools are like just completely new schools because I moved around a lot. Oh, yeah. And so obviously starting new school in Egypt was a big culture shock.
Because was it on a military base?
No, Cairo American College, which was a K through 12 school, was in the town of Mahdi, which is a suburb of Cairo, and I went to school there for 2 years, 7th and 8th grade, and it was just, I mean, sorry, half of 7th, 8th grade, and 9th grade, so 2.5 years of schooling there, and I just remember kind of just being overwhelmed a little bit from that aspect, and too, in Ali Amanu Middle School in Hawaii, I remember, because that was the first time I was bussed off base for school. So that was an experience, and you just had a kind of a culture clash in that school because you had so many local kids. You know, whites in that school were a heavy minority. You did have a lot of military kids from Schofield Barracks as well as Hickam Air Force Base, but they were really the minority at the school. Mm-hmm. So there was just a lot of cultural shock there. And just in general, I do remember being in knots, but I don't know if I got excited about it as you did all the time. I mean, I might have a new shirt or new outfit or something, but I remember being like excited because, you know, I was always optimistic in the sense of like, man, this is going to be the year, Brooke, that I'm cool. You know? And it never really quite materialized.
So you weren't one of the cool kids.
I was in like sixth grade, I think.
Okay. Fifth and sixth grade. It was a good year.
I was a bad kid too. I got in trouble a lot when the principal's off. Not a lot, but I mean, and then I got to 7th and 8th grade, and kids were getting arrested, and I was like, no way I can compete with this. Yeah, I was like, I'm done.
I'm not that bad.
I'm done being the bad kid.
I wasn't the cool kid either. I was telling my daughter this the other day. I was just like solidly in the middle.
Yeah.
I was not a popular kid. Didn't even really want to be a popular kid because it just, that wasn't my cup of tea. But I was like, I had my friends, and that was enough, and I was okay with that. But anyways, yeah, so my kids just started their school year, and it's off to a good start. We're all a little tired because now we have to wake up extra early to get everybody there on time. And my daughter started her first job, and so that's pretty exciting. She is in food service. She's only 16 years old. Wow. So this is a first for her and an adventure. And so yesterday was her first day. I asked her how it went, and she was like, well, I was helping in the drive-through line, and just the man there in the line was kind of just mean and snarky to me and stuff like that. And was, I guess he told her that she can talk fine, but she needs to get her orders right or something like that. So she's going to have to learn how to have a lot of patience and grace. So what was one of your first jobs that you remember maybe teaching you some good character traits?
Oh, wow. I've always had a lot of patience, so I don't know if it taught me character traits, but I was a lifeguard for 4 years. That was my first paying job. But in high school, I worked as an intern on a congressional race. And I do remember doing the polling, Brooke. I helped out with the polling. So you would actually, you know, it wasn't robocalls. You would call people up in the evening and usually do this after school. And I would do it sometimes between like 5 and 6:30 or 5 and 7. And I remember calling, and sometimes an old lady would answer the phone. It was so sad because they wanted somebody to talk to. And I just remember some of these old ladies talking about how you're trying to ask them a political question, and they're telling you how their son or their daughter never visits, and they spend all time in their garden, and they're widowed. And you're just like, wow, this is really hard to deal with. You know, I just want you to answer.
I just need to fill in this little bubble.
And I remember like the lady that was supervising us would come by. She was like, Ray, you can't socialize with them. But I felt so bad. I was like, that these old ladies wanted some. They didn't want to talk politics. They wanted someone to empathize with their situation and you know, talk about how they would lecture you, like, you know, if you have kids one day, I hope you pay attention to them and things like that. So, I know.
Okay.
Sorry to kick it off on such a sad note. There.
Okay. Yes, that's very sad. But I'm sure that that drove home to you how to. You know, treat your parents as they age and get older and make sure that your boys know to take care of you and visit you.
Yeah, right.
So
it's hard to imagine with my 10-month-old and 2-year-old doing that now.
Oh, yeah. Well, they need you for everything at the moment. But okay, so let's go ahead and I didn't want to camp on this too long because we really do have a lot to cover, especially on the poll front, but I wanted to delve into some of the other news that's kind of trending at the moment, namely the stock market. What's been going on with that?
Yeah, we saw the largest drop in the stock market this year. I think it's down to maybe, it's a little bit below this now, I think, but June 2018 levels. So it's dropped off, but I think it's still up over the 3- and 5-year, obviously, and 10-year benchmarks. So the S&P is now, after I think it was July that it went over 3,000 for the first time. That's the large cap index. The S&P is now down under 3,000. And, you know, a lot of people are nervous. And a lot of people that are probably closer to retirement, if they don't have a good asset allocation, are probably sweating bullets right now. Because, you know, in 2000, the Great Recession of, is it 2008, 2009? Yeah, a lot of people got out of the market, which was a mistake if you didn't have to. Because, you know, the market dropped 10, 15, maybe 20% at one point, and they got out of the market and ended up losing a lot of money because it bounced back within a few years. But, yeah, I mean, it's a big deal. There's all this recession talk because of the inverted yield situation, and I didn't really know what that was, but I Googled it, and it talks about basically receiving a lower interest rate for a long-term loan than a short-term loan. So, or receiving a lower return on that rate. So, 5-year CD may be less than a 6-month CD in terms of return. So,
it's incentivizing the short-term.
Yeah, and it shows that, I mean, on the vast predictions, it shows that, you know, anytime you had that situation, we went into a recession. So, that may not be the case, though. I mean,
if we do head into a recession, although we don't hope for that, but it does seem consistent when you just look at economic cycles and how things go and the government interfering with the markets. Do you foresee will this play a big role in the elections? I know typically the economy can drive elections, or at least that's what they used to think. But in the age of Trump, President Trump, things are kind of topsy-turvy anyways. And so those that used to oppose economic protectionism now are advocates for it and things like that. Right. So would the recession even be a major issue if it was a somewhat soft one?
I think it will be, because Trump, part of his you know, winning formula that he talks about is how the economy is going to be great. And that was a big, you know, formulaic response to, I mean, that's a big formula from his campaign, is just how great the economy was going to be. And of course, all the indicators from past elections, for the most part, there's been a few exceptions, but if the economy's slumping, the incumbent loses the election. I mean, you had Carter against Reagan. That was a close race till the very end, but all the undecided voters broke for Reagan. And of course, George H.W. Bush lost to Bill Clinton in 1992 because of a lagging sort of economic indicators and recession. And this was coming out when George H.W. Bush, this was right after Desert Storm. I mean, his approval rating was like 90 or 91% at one point, and he ended up losing re-election because of the economy. So I think, you know, it's headed in a situation where the media will pile on Trump so much and blame him. And, you know, maybe there's some blame to throw at Trump because of some of his trade policies, but they're going to just pile on so much because they detest his president. And it'll be interesting to see how Trump handles that if there is an economic downturn to some degree. I don't expect a full-on throttled recession, but we'll see. I mean, you know, anybody's guess could be as good as mine. I'm not an expert in this field. But it'll be interesting to see what happens, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, it will. So let's hope that things just tick back up and this was sort of just a little fluke. But
And just real quick, if you're in the stock market, keep in the stock market because taking your money out is not a good decision when you get scared or something. Because really when it comes to the market, it's about all about having a good asset allocation and staying in for the long term. So.
And let me just say a little something on that personal story. So I thought I would try my hand at day trading when I was like when I was 21. Okay. So I figured I would put some money inside I had a TD Ameritrade account or whatever it was at the time. And so I did that, and there was this newfangled business out called Netflix, and so I decided to invest in that, and so I buy some shares, and then all of a sudden, Blockbuster is still the chief competitor and very much a formidable force, and so Blockbuster announces after maybe 6 months after I had the Netflix stock, they announced that they are going to start a DVD or mail service too. And I'm like, oh my goodness, all my Netflix shares are worth nothing now.
Yeah.
And so I hurry up and freak out and sell them all at like $14 a share.
Wow.
And so if I would have just held on and stayed course, I would have had a lot of money.
You wouldn't be working at Civitas.
I would not be laying on the beach. Yeah, I'd have my own private island by now. So anyways, there's a lesson for you. Learn from my mistakes. But okay. I wanted to take one moment to talk about the Philadelphia shooter.
Yeah.
So if you've been watching the news at all, you probably did see this, especially as heightened sensitivities are right now because of the El Paso and the Dayton, Ohio shootings. Then comes this Philadelphia shooter. His name was Maurice Hill, I believe.
Yeah, he's 36.
36 years old in Philadelphia. And he shot and injured, not killed, but injured six police officers. So I thought it was really interesting because you and I noted that when we were reading this article, we noted that he had already had a long criminal record and was still able to access tons of guns. On multiple occasions, had been locked up for this, yet still these gun laws that were in place to stop him didn't actually stop him.
One news report, and I don't know if it was Fox News or CNBC, but where I read the article said that he had already broken. This is just, you know, what they have knowledge of and reporting on the situation now, but he was in violation of 10 different gun laws. So obviously, you know, it's almost a cliche because we hear it so much, but it's so true. And just because we hear it all the time doesn't mean it's any less true. But criminals don't follow gun laws. I mean, everybody.
Surprise.
Yeah, everybody should know that. I mean, whatever your position is on in terms of gun control or trying to create some new gun limits, I'm not for them. But if you have a position for that, you still, I don't think, can believe that gun laws stop criminals from getting guns. It's not like they walk into Walmart or they're not walking into a gun store to buy a gun. In nearly every instance, they are getting it on the black market because they can't. I mean, if they have some kind of criminal element of their background, they're not going to be a felony. They're not going to be able to get that firearm. So, you know, they're going to they're going to circle around the law to get the firearms that they want.
Right. And so that was one of the points that I think really stood out to Ray and I both was that when we already knew this, but once again, these sort of gun-free zones, some of these gun restrictions, they aren't really stopping the bad guys. No. We already have tons of guns accessible on the black market. And so it's essentially just tying the hands of good guys. And so I think if you're growing up or you're raising kids during this day and age, if you're a female, guns are the great equalizer. And so there's just all these instances in which restricting gun access for law-abiding citizens is just a recipe for disaster. And his story, the Philadelphia shooter story, goes to show us once again that you can have these restrictions in place and they're still not going to produce the desired effects because of the reality on the ground. And before we move on, though, President Trump has been talking about red flag laws. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about them here in the state of North Carolina. Donald and I discussed them last week. But that's another one that I have some concerns about. I know some conservatives support it. But President Trump, who was it that he said should be reviewed in light of
Twitter? It was Andrew Cuomo or or Chris Cuomo. Yeah.
So, I mean, you see somebody who's really irate. Chris Cuomo from, was it CNN, just completely lost his mind the other day because someone called him what he believed was a racial slur against Italians. And
Fredo.
Yeah. Which I didn't even know what that was. I never.
But have you seen The Godfather?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so you didn't know. Yeah.
So, anyways, President Trump was like, they need to, you know, slap a red flag law on him or use that against him. And so I just think about how arbitrary it can be if you have a video of like me getting really, really angry or something and take my gun.
I got a question for you, Brooke. I saw some people, and some of them were friends of yours on Twitter, but I guess they're friends of mine too because I follow them now too. But I got in contact with them through you. They were saying that Trump was making the best case for against the red flag laws ever through his tweets and stuff because of Cuomo. Now, do you think Trump, and I think they were making fun of Trump, but do you think Trump's really this brilliant guy who was sabotaging red flag laws through his tweets? Or do you think it's just Trump being
I have
Trump?
No idea. He could be like such an artful mastermind behind all of this that he's like running psychological laps around all of us. That could be the case. Or it could just be that he's like,
maybe Trump, and I don't want to give Trump too much credit, but maybe he's just better than a lot of his political opponents out there who I don't have a very high opinion of either. You know, they're not. Let's be frank. The best, the most elite people in general in America are not going into politics. Now, they may be popular people. They may be people that are successful in terms of people, you know, being people adverse, but they're not people who are obviously, in most cases, running businesses or going into medicine or going into tech fields where, and I'm not even talking about a monetary aspect, but just in terms of, I think, being in society and having the aspect of being able to impact people from a positive, especially at the federal level. I mean, there's not a lot of positive impact going on in Washington right now.
If anything, there's a lot of good people leaving politics, and that's a scary thought, right? So you're hearing a lot of Republicans in Congress choosing not to run for re-election, and he had seen the same among a lot more moderate Democrats. The pro-life Democrats have been all but pushed out of the Democratic Party.
Well, that was
why
Colin Powell, you know, I mean, whether you like Colin Powell or you don't like him, that was one of his big overriding themes of why I'm not running. While I think, you know, there was truth to the story about his wife not wanting him to run, and he just said that politics had become too toxic and too messy.
And that's unfortunate because these are the people that are making really big decisions for us.
Right.
And so you want some good guys and gals in there, but it's becoming increasingly difficult to not just become a mudslinger there and just power hungry.
Yeah.
And so we need good statesmen, good stateswomen.
And we need good Americans. Because
good Americans
are what create good statesmen and create a good political culture and climate.
Yeah. No, you're right.
So if we're willing to put up with this stuff, what does that say about us?
Preach. Okay. Mic drop moment there. Let's go ahead and move on to our polling. Let's discuss that because you're going to find this really interesting, actually, especially the socialism questions, I think. And I believe there's a lot of cause for encouragement. But before we get to the progress on the socialism opposition here in North Carolina, this was a statewide poll that we just released yesterday from Civitas Poll. You can find it on our website at nccivitas.org under the poll tab. And the first polling question that made a ton of waves, as Ray alluded to right before the podcast, if you were watching on Facebook, was President Trump's matchups against Biden, Warren, Harris, and Sanders.
Yeah, we picked the top four poll getters in the Democratic primary and matched them up against Trump here in North Carolina. And obviously, most of them were very close. I think the only one outside the margin of error was
Harris.
Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm. She was about 6 points out.
Yeah, and some of that may be because she has a lower name ID in North Carolina. But there's a thing too. I wasn't thinking about going into this today, but Harris, she doesn't garner a lot of black support. I think some people think that she will, but I think her tradition, her heritage is Jamaican. Mm-hmm. So it may not be an obvious. Some people assume, well, all black primary voters are going to vote for Harris. Mm-hmm. But that may not be the case because, you know, she's not African-American. I think, you know, her heritage is Jamaican. So obviously she's going to garner support from I think, some of the black community. But it's not an obvious sort of like Obama, even though he wasn't African-American. He was very entrenched in Chicago.
Well, his dad's from Kenya, too.
Yeah, his dad's from Kenya. Mm-hmm. But, he wasn't part of that African-American
lineage.
He was
from Hawaii.
Yeah. And so Biden has a lot of credibility with with black voters right now.
He does. He does, actually. I think he's leading. Mm-hmm. He's the top vote getter among black voters. And among females, I was looking at the crosstabs, and I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but among female voters, Harris nor Warren are doing exceptionally well. Right now,
those girls like Uncle Joe,
which is shocking to me. I'm like, why do they like handsy Joe Biden? Why? But I guess when you're talking about him versus Donald Trump, then, you know, some of those females, I don't know. But anyways, okay, I don't want to get into that.
If you're that type of girl, then you're just that type of girl, I guess.
It's not where I was going with that.
Okay, but you know what I
okay. Another thing, though, that stood out in this in these poll results was, oh, we didn't even tell them, like, where everybody landed, though. But President Trump beat all of them within, but some of those numbers were within the margin of error. So he and Biden came closest. I think they had a 1-point spread. Mm. Then came Sanders, Warren, and then Harris. But what I thought was particularly interesting were the Democrats that said they would vote for Donald Trump. The people that we polled, there were like 13% mm-hmm. of Democrats that they would cross over, whereas there were only about 7% of Republicans that would. So it seems like even if a Republican isn't willing to vote for Donald Trump, they're not willing to go over to the Democratic side. And part of that, I would guess, is that the Democrats, the Democratic Party has become so progressive, so far left. It's not like a moderate Democratic Party anymore. And so I think that plays into a Republican hesitancy to cross over, even if they disagree with President Trump.
Yeah. And there's just a lot of, you know, North Carolina is obviously, for its historical generations, has been a Democrat state. So I think there's a lot of rural white voters who still identify. Not a lot, but there's still some left that are rural, white, and old who identify as Democrat and will till the day they die and mm-hmm. probably vote, obviously, much more Republican, at least on the federal level.
It's so. Very much a different Democratic Party nowadays, though.
Oh, for sure. It's a far-left party, so I think, you know, they're rapidly gaining new followers, mm-hmm. but they're also leaving a lot of people behind. And that's just the reality of the situation. So, you know, and Republicans have similar problems because, at least in terms of, you know, there's a lot of people who just don't like Donald Trump and are unwilling to accept him as leader of the party. So, you know, there's both sides have weaknesses going into this election.
Yeah. Yeah. And but speaking of those crossover voters and Democrats voting for Republicans and vice versa, something that was interesting that Donald Bryson, our president, pointed out at the poll lunch was that there are between 8% and 12% of those that voted for President Trump in 2016 also voted for Governor Roy Cooper at the state level. And so that's pretty interesting. So therein was a crossover votes. You know, they voted for the Republican candidate at the federal and then the Democratic candidate at the state. And I think that just goes to show you that there is this key part of the electorate. I mean, that's 8% to 12% is significant when you think about how close 2016 races were.
Oh, yeah.
That are they hold almost what seems like two different views. And so my question for you, do you think that it's social issues, obviously, Trump and Cooper don't align on things like right to life and traditional marriage or religious liberties, protecting religious liberties. Actually, I don't think President Trump is pro-traditional marriage either. But,
I don't think he is.
Are social issues not driving these people? What is driving them?
Are you talking about the Cooper-Trump voters?
The Cooper-Trump
okay,
voters.
Okay, I'm going to only... I can only offer kind of I don't know what the word I'm looking for right now, but just sort of personable evidence.
Anecdotal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Brooke. You're so smart. Couldn't even think of that word. But
I've had my coffee today.
Yeah. I don't drink coffee, so I underperform. But anyways, I'm going to only offer up anecdotal evidence on this, but I do know a couple young women that Kelly worked with that were Republican that voted for Trump, which is kind of ironic in some sense, but also voted for Cooper. Mm-hmm. And their reasoning had to do with partially, I think, the HB2 issue. And not even so much that they were so angry about HB2, but they thought McCrory was bringing a lot of a negative attention to North Carolina unneedlessly. Okay. And if you don't remember back in the campaign, Trump actually took a different position than McCrory on HB2. He kind of pivoted away from it and said it's kind of an unnecessary law. So he did not allow himself to get embroiled or wrapped up in that controversy.
Do you think if he would have come out in favor of McCrory's position on it, that it would have boosted McCrory, or would it have
That's a good question. I don't think it would have hurt Trump statewide so much, but it may have given a little boost to McCrory. It may give him a little bit more cover, I guess I should say. But then back then, I mean, it was Trump. You got to remember, we're looking at this through the lens of Trump winning the presidency. You have to remember, a lot of people were just like, Trump's a complete garbage dumpster mess, you know? And so it could have possibly had the potential to hurt him a little bit too, because, you know, this was before the Hollywood access tape and some other things that, you know, created more and more damage to Trump. So it's hard to say. I mean, there were a lot of people who thought Trump was going to tank in like 40 states. And so it's hard to say for certain from the lens now. But I think in retrospect, it certainly probably would have given McCrory a little bit more cover on that issue.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So hindsight, you know, is a lot more 2020 than.
And I think there were a lot of people who thought McCooper was moderate. I think there's a lot of people that still think Cooper's moderate.
Yeah, I don't think the general public, voting public here in North Carolina, understand just how radical his positions
right.
are.
Yeah, he continually moves to the left.
He does,
and you see this on the gun thing, which we talked about. He had those. He just issued restrictive orders or kind of executive orders from the governor's level on the guns, and they don't really have any teeth to it, but it's basically creating departments to do some compliance stuff on gun stuff, but it's nothing big. Even Berger didn't really say anything bad about it. He said, oh, wow, I didn't know we weren't doing this, kind of underplaying it a little bit. But, you know, I just don't think that, you know, on the gun issue, Cooper at one time had gotten an A rating from the NRA. And he has moved, you know, part of what's going on around the culture, but he's continuing to follow the current path of the Democratic Party on this issue. And
yeah.
Moving further and further left.
Yeah, he's definitely not out of step with the Democratic
no,
Party today.
No, not in any
so
way.
So if you're curious as to where Governor Cooper stands on a lot of these issues, just look at the regular
what
platform.
What would be, can we think of an issue, and I'm sure there's something that are subtle, but I can't think of any major issue that Cooper disagrees with sort of the current Democratic field. Now, he's not going to use some of the same rhetoric they use
right.
on the campaign trail.
Because it won't sit well with
no,
voters here.
No, but
Carolina.
I can't think of any issue where he's out of step with the Democratic Party.
Hmm.
That's a good question for maybe some of these uber insiders in North Carolina, but I can't think of any issue.
Yeah. If you're watching on Facebook and you can think of one, let us know. Chime in. Yep. That's interesting. That's a good thought there. So anyways, let's go ahead and wrap this up and talk about socialism, which is what I told you all. I thought you would find some at least encouragement in these results. And that was, we had asked statewide again, 500 North Carolinians, their thoughts on socialism. And the first question that we asked them was, based on what you know, would you favor or oppose the United States political and economic system becoming more socialist? And 21% favored, whereas 64% opposed. But the good news there is that that was down from 23% that favored back in February and 60% opposed. So there's a slight decline in support for socialism. But this is probably more of the more important result. After you define socialism to this audience, which this is the definition of socialism that we put in the poll. As you may know, socialism is a political and economic system in which the government assumes control of much of private industry, including things like healthcare, education, banking, manufacturing, and energy production. Socialist countries aim to provide their citizens with basic services at the cost of significantly higher tax rates. When they were informed of what socialism actually was, only 19% favored and 72% opposed.
Wow.
What does that tell you?
I think, obviously, if you're going to give more people information about what socialism entails, and you're not going to kind of throw in that word free, because I think there's an element. I'm not making fun of the younger generation, because I think a lot of times they haven't been taught things about economics. And so sometimes we sort of make fun of young people and say they're dumb or they don't know this or that. A lot of times they just haven't been taught things like this. So when you're talking about canceling out student loans or, you know, the federal government doing this for me and it's not going to have any cost for me, and maybe they're not thinking about debt or deficits and how that's going to wipe out their savings one day and how that's going to basically make them slaves of the federal government. They're not thinking in those terms. And so I think when people do get more information, it makes sense that they're going to turn against socialism because they haven't really been exposed to a lot of these ideas. And it's the first time maybe they get a little bit of pushback and say, oh, that might happen under this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, if something's just going to be free and going to be covered for me, then I'm for that too, Brooke. You know?
Right. Until you really think about those implications, which is what you're saying. And actually, I'm glad that you particularly touched on the young people, because once socialism was defined, Opposition to it grew among most North Carolinians, but especially among 18 to 34-year-olds. The opposition increased by 16 points. So that was the biggest movement we saw when you define socialism versus just their own version of it, what they thought it was when they initially answered that first question. That marked decline in support among the younger voters. I think that's essential, but it also highlights what you said. They don't know what socialism is. They hear the buzzwords that Bernie Sanders uses, AOC uses. They hear the words like free. They don't understand that you just printing more money really isn't.
No, you're going to end up like Germany's Weimar Republic, where people were pushing around wheelbarrows to buy a loaf of bread, you know? So, I mean, that's that is the consequences of inflation like that. If we just start printing money, I mean, it's going to wipe out your savings. It'll wipe out the value of your home. It'll wipe out, you know, your investments in the market. So you should be thinking about those things, because if you want to retire one day, or if you want to leave money to your kids, or if you don't want to be working more and more to make less and less, then you should be thinking about these things. But, you know, if you're young, you're thinking about, how do I get this paid for? Or how do I, you know, have a really affordable, trendy apartment downtown and have everything
paying off my student loan debt?
Yeah. And so, you know, the stuff that Bernie is saying, or Elizabeth Warren, is very appealing. I mean, even myself, who, you know, I know, at least to a rather intelligent degree, I know economics and I know the market. I know the cost of government. But when Warren started talking about she's going to pay for daycare for everybody, I was like, hello, Warren, you know? I was like,
Liz, let me talk to you.
I was like wearing a little feather headdress, like, I'm for Warren.
There's a line, and you just love to cross it, don't you?
I love to
go
over it.
Please forgive my friend Ray, you all. But, okay, yeah, so this is, I think, a really encouraging trend in North Carolina. And then the last encouraging trend that this poll indicated was in support or opposition to Medicaid expansion, which, if you've been connected to North Carolina politics at all, this General Assembly session, it is that Medicaid expansion is the number one policy priority for Governor Cooper's administration, as well as most Democrats. Oh, yeah. Yet the public, according to this poll, is less sweet on Medicaid expansion than they were a couple of months ago when we polled it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember the exact numbers, Brooke. Maybe you could fill them in on that. But there was a noticeable decline among people when they found out more information about the cost of Medicaid. And mostly, I think this all has to do with people just wanting healthcare costs to go down. So they don't want entitlements to be expanded, really, when you ultimately press them on that. They may not understand, you know, if it's just an option of going out there and helping poor people, I think most people are for that. But if you're turning it into a middle class entitlement, or it's going to end up costing the state more and more and crowd out other expenses like education and roads, and put a lot of undue financial pressure on the state, then people are obviously going to, you know, balk at this.
Right. And you did a good job of just describing that, what Medicaid expansion I think really is, which is a middle class entitlement in a lot of ways. It doesn't mean that some lower income people won't be able to access it, but many of those people are actually eligible for private health care coverage under the exchange anyways.
Right.
And so this is just basically expanding the welfare state well beyond the scope of what Medicaid was initially intended to provide for a specific population, such as pregnant women, the elderly, really impoverished individuals, children. But this would expand to working age, able-bodied adults, by and large. Most of the population would be that. So anyway, support has declined, especially when you tell them who the population would cover, such as those working age, able-bodied adults. That makes people 47% less likely to support Medicaid expansion when they learn that. And when they learn the cost of it, which is about $340 million a year from the state, they're 50% less likely to support.
And it's important to note that $340 million is likely to go up, because the 90% match is not going to be in there in perpetuity. See, Brooke's had her coffee. I don't know what's going on. Like, tongue tied today.
I've got my tea too.
But also go to ncivitas.org, because I know it'll be out soon. But Leah, I just edited it this morning, so Leah has a really good new explainer. I think Brian helped with that a little bit too, on Medicaid expansion. And
yes, it will
very,
be a
very
resource.
Good, very good resource with a lot of links in there. If you have questions, or you don't, maybe you don't feel like you fully understand this issue, You'll find that at ncivitas.org by the time this airs, I'm sure. So go check that out. It's really, really good and really easy, I think. I just, what impressed me about the piece was that it just really explained things real well.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so if you have any questions about this issue, then that'll be a good resource. And I think it's done with obviously conservative perspective, but also very fair, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. So you all, thank you so much for joining us.
The blue dress. Did you want to talk about Bill Clinton? We haven't talked about Epstein, obviously, that suicide, but I just saw on Twitter it broke the Bill Clinton.
Ray is making me talk about this.
I just wanted to get your reaction because I was thinking about framing, packaging, and maybe framing that photo for you when we move into our new dig.
Why don't you explain to our audience which painting you're talking about?
A lot of the English, there's some of the English in cross-dressing. But there are a lot of the English media is running with this story full throttle is that Jeffrey Epstein, apparently in his house or home or somewhere, had a painting of Bill Clinton in a blue dress with high heels on.
Mm-hmm. And, did you see the painting?
I saw the painting. Yeah. Yeah.
What'd you think of it?
It didn't do a lot for me. I'm going to be honest.
So he wasn't like just really enrapturing in that dress?
No, but I just saw a lot of people on Twitter commenting that it's too much even for 2019.
So do you think that's a real painting? Like, do you think Bill Clinton actually posed?
No, I don't think sort of. So, right? I mean, you can't say for sure. But,
I don't know.
But I don't think so. I think that was just someone painted it.
Yep.
I don't think he posed for it. I hope not.
I'm not going to contribute to this conversation beyond what I already
Brooke
have.
Brooke just doesn't like getting into the good discussions that people want to hear. Brooke just wants to stay to policy.
Yeah, let's just stay in policy. I don't want to talk about this.
Okay, but people are interested in this topic.
Okay, then you talk about it, Ray.
I'll hold a separate show where we talk about the blue dress.
Talk about all the seedy stuff. Okay, you guys, thank you for joining us this week. You take care. Bye-bye. Bye.